Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're continuing reading of the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 5, entitled Prahlad, the Saintly Son of Hiranyakashipu. And we've been studying the purports 23 and 24 for quite some time now. No complaints on our part. Very wonderful purport. So we'll just recite the verse again, and then today we're going to cover the topic of Vandanam. Shri Parada Vacha, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishno, Smaranam Padasevanam, Archanam Mananam Dasyam, Sakyam Admanavedama. It is Punksarpita Vishno, Bhaktis Jennamalakshana, Kriyati Bhagavatya Da, Tadmanyeditam Uttamam. So Srila Prabhupada translates that as follows. Prahlad Maharaj said, hearing and chanting about the transcendental holy name, form, qualities, paraphernalia, and pastimes of Lord Vishnu, remembering them, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, offering the Lord respectful worship with 16 types of paraphernalia, offering prayers to the Lord, becoming his servant, considering the Lord one's best friend, and surrendering everything unto him. In other words, serving him with the body, mind, and words. These nine processes are accepted as pure devotional service. One who has dedicated his life to the service of Krishna through these nine methods should be understood to be the most learned person, for he has acquired complete knowledge. So, what this indicates, very interesting, that last sentence. One who has dedicated his life to the service of Krishna through these nine methods should be understood to be the most learned person, for he has acquired complete knowledge. So, this definition of complete knowledge is different from what non-devotees might consider complete knowledge, but we don't care. As Krishna says in the 15th chapter, if you know me, you know everything. Right? Right? Krishna said that? Yomam Vetya Samudo. Right? He said, if you know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, free from doubt, Samudo, then you know everything. You're the knower of everything. So this is what's being indicated here. If you become a pure devotee of Krishna, then you're counted as one person who knows everything. All right, so now let's jump to today's topic, which is Vandanam. Offering prayers. So, item number six, Vandanam. Although prayers are part of deity worship, right? No problem understanding that when you worship the deity, you have to recite so many prayers before, during, and supposed to be after also. I'm always pushing the devotees on this one. That after you finish worshiping, there are some list of prayers for forgiveness that you should recite. And I see a lot of the pujaris don't bother with that. They finish their service and they just out the door. But that's also part of the worshiping process. You offer obeisances, first of all, to your spiritual master before you start. And then you perform Bhuta Shuddhi, you recite all these nice mantras. And then in the end, you're supposed to recite these prayers, Mantra Hinam, Girihinam, Bhakti Hinam, Janadanam. You're supposed to recite those prayers for forgiveness. And I notice, again, a lot of the pujaris, they don't bother with that. So please, you should do that. It's part of the process. So Prabhupada says, although prayers are part of deity worship, they may be considered separately like the other items, such as hearing and chanting. And therefore, separate statements are given herewith. The Lord has unlimited transcendental qualities and opulences, and one who feels influenced by the Lord's qualities and various activities offers prayers to the Lord. Again, very interesting statement. We come into this world and we become completely covered by Maya, illusion, and therefore everything we do is in pursuit of illusory goals. In other words, materially contaminated. So even when we get to the stage of praying to God, like they say there are no atheists on the battlefield, or Prabhupada said recently in one of his lectures, even the scientists, you know, pray out to God when they're in trouble. You know. So the tendency to pray is there, but what do we pray for? And this is how you can judge your advancement on the spiritual path. when we're materially contaminated, we're praying for material achievement of material goals. Oh Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes-Benz? You know, give me a wife, give me a house, give me a color TV, Om Jai Jagadish Hari, like that. We're always praying for something material. So we can judge our progress in spiritual life. But Krishna says that this is a beginning, and it's still a legitimate beginning. Chaturvidabhijanti mam jana sukhachana arjana. Artha jigyasu artarthi gyani cha bharatartha bha. He says, four kinds of personalities approach me. In other words, pray to me. Those who are in need, they want money. Those who are inquisitive, those who are in distress, and ultimately the one who's in full knowledge. So, to approach God and pray for some material benefit is better than to not believe in God or not approach God at all. The danger, though, as Prabhupada points out, is that when that material request is not fulfilled, then one becomes atheistic. And the classic example you used many times was during the war. Again, that war was prominent in Prabhupada's life, World War II. So he actually went through both of the major ones, World War I and World War II. So he's saying that, during the war, on both sides, there were women, especially, praying, let my father, my husband, my son, my brother come back from the war. And then when they didn't come back, then what kind of God are you that you allowed my father, my son, my brother, husband to be killed? So this is the danger of praying in a materialistic mood. But here it's stated, the Lord has unlimited transcendental qualities and opulences, and one who feels influenced by the Lord's qualities in various activities offers prayers to the Lord. So this is the impetus for the pure devotees to pray. The transcendental qualities and opulences of the Lord and the influence that they have upon the devotee. In this way, he becomes successful. In this connection, the following are some of the offenses to be avoided. Now, these don't seem directly related to Vandana prayers, but they're here anyway. A, to offer obeisances on one hand. B, to offer obeisances with one's body covered. C, to show one's back to the deity. D, to offer obeisances on the left side of the deity. And E, to offer obeisances very near the deity. So again, these seem a little obtuse, a little not directly related to Vandanam prayer, but Prabhupada chose to list them here. So we should be careful. Again, it's not that just because I come into the temple and throw my body on the floor, that means everything is okay. We have to follow some etiquette, not to offer obeisances on one hand or offer obeisances with one's body covered, not to show one's back to the deity, that's pretty obvious, not to offer obeisances on the left side of the deity. Generally speaking, when you offer obeisances, whether to the spiritual master or to the Lord on the altar, you put your left side towards them. And not to offer obeisances very near the deity. In other words, don't be too familiar. Even with Prabhupada, we saw that. One of the classic... because the devotees were not used to Prabhupada's accent and his English pronunciation, even though he knew English better than native English speakers, but they weren't used to it. So when they translated or transcribed the tapes of his, recorded tapes of his lectures, morning walks, and like that, they made a lot of mistakes. So one classic mistake was in regard to this, not getting too near. Once Prabhupada was right here, I think it happened. I only went on one morning walk. It wasn't the one that I went on, but it was here, I think, in Venice Beach. And the devotees were crowding around Srila Prabhupada and getting too close. So Prabhupada says, you can hear distinctly if you know Prabhupada's accent, he says, don't come near. But if you read the translation, the transcription, what they made from that tape, they wrote, don't come here. So there's a huge difference between don't come near and don't come here. So similarly with the deities, it's not being said that you shouldn't come near to the deity, obviously saying don't come too near to offer obeisances. Meaning specifically the pujaris, obviously those who are not on the altar can't get too near, but we shouldn't be overly familiar with Krishna. So this topic of Vandanam, there's so much that could be said. Prabhupada didn't say anything beyond what we just read here. And I think it's just in because of space. Because obviously he could have said a lot about every single item here, but we already have a 16-page purport. Imagine if he... So we're just going to stop here then and discuss a little bit about this item of Vandanam, offering prayers. Who is the person who personifies or exemplifies offering prayers? Somebody besides Bhrigu? You must have done very well in school. Your hand is always like the first up. teachers must have loved you. Anybody else besides Brigapati? You know, for each of the 9 processes of the devotional service, there's one devotee who exemplifies that process. So who is the person that exemplifies Vandanam, prayer? Akrura, yes. Ding. Prize goes to Prem Sankirtan. So Akrura. Now, I've always wondered, why Akrura? There's so many wonderful prayers offered by so many devotees, just like now we're going through the prayers of Queen Kunti. That's several, however many weeks. Every week we're hearing a lecture of Prabhupada from that. Wonderful prayers. And one of my favorites are the prayers of Shukadev Goswami. He's a celebrated speaker of the Srimad Bhagavatam, but in the second canto, he has some prayers there. You may have, you know, some of them you recognize right away. Karate Hunandra Pulinda Pulkasha. That comes from that set of prayers by Shukadev Goswami. But that entire prayer is such a wonderful. So I've always wondered, why Akrura? It doesn't seem like his prayers are so special. But somewhere or other, he has been selected as the personification of prayer to Krishna. So I thought we would, rather than read all of them, there's a chapter summary. This is from the 40th chapter of the 10th canto. So we'll just read the summary of Akrura's prayers. So this is chapter 40 of the 10th canto, which is entitled The Prayers of Akrura. This chapter relates Akrura's prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, we know the situation that Kamsa wanted to kill Krishna and Balaram. He had tried so many ways, sent so many of his henchmen, henchwomen also, like Putana, to try to kill them, and no deal, no dice. So he was getting more and more anxious by the second. It had been foretold he was going to be killed. So he devised a new scheme. Okay, since I'm sending all these, you know, assassins to kill them and it hasn't been successful, I'm going to bring them into my camp. And then, of course, I'll be successful. How could I not? I'm going to have so many opportunities to kill them. So, but, you know, he couldn't go himself to Vrindavan to invite them. He couldn't send. So he's, who can I send? Somebody that Krishna and Balaram will trust. Ah, Akrura. So he sent Akrura to Vrindavan to get them. And Akrura knew he was a devotee. He's, you know, you wonder why would he go and pick them up, but he knew Krishna cannot be killed by this demon. So, okay. And I get a chance to go to Vrindavan and see Krishna. So he went to Vrindavan, and that's also, that whole pastime is so wonderful because it includes the gopis trying to prevent Akrura from taking Krishna and Balaram out of Vrindavan. That's very, very heartrending scene there where they're holding the chariot and refusing to let them go. So attached to Krishna and Balaram. But finally, they relent. Akrura preaches to them about why they should let him go, and so he takes off with it. But a little way down the road, it was time for Gayatri. So he got down off the chariot, left Krishna and Balaram on the chariot, went, took bath in the river, and Prabhupada mentions there that, you know, the Vedic custom is after taking bath, you stay submerged in the water, half submerged, and then you murmur your Gayatri. This is also very important for those who are second initiated. The Gayatri mantra is to be murmured. You're not supposed to sit there with clenched jaw and tight lip. And no, it's not like that. Prabhupada said in another place that it should be mouthed. You don't hear the words, but you're saying the words. Like that. You're saying the words. Not. That's not how it's done. The Gayatri mantra is to be murmured. It's to be spoken softly. You're hearing it in your mind, but you're actually saying the words with your tongue. You're not just tight. So he got into the water. He was murmuring his Gayatri. And all of a sudden, he saw Krishna and Balaram in the water. So he's thinking, my God, I know he left them on the chariot. So he runs back to the chariot just to make sure. And they're sitting on the chariot. So he runs back to the water. And this time he sees that Balaram has become Seshanaga. And Krishna is sitting on the coils in a forearm form. So this really just blows all the circuits. And he's just in ecstasy. He's like trembling and showing all the symptoms of ecstasy. And that's when he offers his prayer. So this is the prelude. So Akrura prayed, quote, Brahma, who created this visible world, emanated from the lotus navel of the Supreme Lord. The 5 elements of physical nature, the five corresponding objects of perception, the 10 senses, the ego, the total nature, the primeval creator, and the demigods all originate from his bodily limbs. He cannot be known by sensory knowledge, and thus even Brahma and the other demigods are ignorant of his real identity. So Krishna substantiates that in the Bhagavad Gita in the 10th chapter when he says, Name vidhu surgana pavavak namaharshaya ahang adiri devanam maharshinam cha sarvashaha. He said that even the demigods and the great sages, they don't know me because in all respects I am their origin. So it's extremely difficult for the offspring to know the parent. Like most of us, whatever we know about our parents is what they told us. It's very hard to do independent research, even for your material parent, what to speak of Krishna, the spiritual original father of everyone. So Krishna is saying here, Name vidhu suragana, prabhavak namaharsha. Even the great rishis, the demigods, Name vidhu, they don't know me. They know a lot, and we're not talking about ordinary personalities here. These rishis, they know the Vedas inside and out, they know so much, but they still don't know Krishna, because it's not possible to know Krishna in full. It's not possible. Prabhupada used to say, the gopis and the cowherd boys of Vrindavan, they were not Vedic scholars, but still, they were attracted to Krishna, completely, complete attraction. They are allowed to forget Krishna's position, but not totally. Recently we had a visit from one Devakinand Maharaj from Vrindavan. He was here. He's here in America doing some preaching tour, I guess. He's supposedly from the Nimbarka line. He's born Brijbasi, and he's very well known among in the Indian community for his preaching. Bhagavatam especially. As I've been told, he doesn't give so much philosophy. It's more stories and advice for grihastha life and stuff like that. But a lot of people are attracted to hearing him. So I was invited to meet him. There was a lunch at Lochan Prabhu's house, and I went there. And in the course of our conversation, he was saying how, you know, when you follow these rules and regulations and all that, that's just the beginning. But if you really want to love Krishna, you have to catch the hand of a Brijbasi. Okay, no problem there. Yeah, because it says one has to follow in the footsteps of the pure devotees of the Lord, especially those in Vrindavan. But then he was saying that the Brijbasis, they don't see Krishna as special at all. They don't see Krishna as special at all. They grab him, they hold him. And so I said, well, not exactly. They do understand that Krishna is very special. Even though they may appear to be familiar with Krishna, they ride on his shoulders even. But when there is some danger, there's a forest fire, they don't call out to Subal or Madhu Mangal. Everybody says, Krishna, save us. Isn't it? So even when you're on that level of familiarity, like the Brijbasis are, still, they think of Krishna as special. He's my friend, yes, I have so many friends, but Krishna is the special friend. Everybody, the cows, the calves, the trees, the water, the land, all the parents, the elderly gopis and gopas, Krishna is special. And that's why when Lord Brahma stole the calves and cows and Krishna expanded, exactly as each calf and cowherd boy, for 1 year, the fathers and mothers and the cows, they were all bewildered. Why they're so now especially attracted to their offspring? Apparently the same offspring that they had just the day before, but all of a sudden, now they have this very special feeling towards their son or their calf or whatever. So yes, the Brijbasis externally, to external vision, may not see Krishna as anything special. Prabhupada used to say, they don't know that Krishna is God. They're thinking, maybe he's a demigod. Maybe, but even that is maybe. They're not so sure, because he's done so many wonderful things. But yes, they still see Krishna as being special. And that is the whole point of being a pure devotee. For the pure devotee, Krishna is their all in all. Everybody else, yes, they don't overlook Mother Yashoda or the other gopis or gopas, but still, Krishna is the, as we would say in English, the cynosure, the main attraction of everybody's life. That's also very well documented in the case of the Pandavas. The Pandavas were certainly attached to their wife Draupadi. The whole Mahabharata centers around this relationship of the Pandavas with Draupadi and the insult of Draupadi by the Kurus and the war that was fought because of that. They were willing to die to protect Draupadi's honor. They were so much attached. How many of us here who are married, who have husband or wife, are willing to die for your husband or die for your wife? It's not such an easy thing to give up your life for somebody else. So they were willing to die to protect Draupadi's honor. But at the end, when it was time to go back to home, if you read that chapter, first canto, they just walked out of the palace. They didn't even look back. Just by chance, Draupadi and Kunti, they were looking out the window and they saw that they're leaving. And they realized, ah. So because they were so attracted to Krishna, when it's time to go back to Krishna, everybody else is like forgotten. The wife that you were willing to die for, your sons, your property, everything is forgotten to cement your relationship with Krishna. So that is the position of all pure devotees. It's not that, you know, they see Krishna as exactly everybody else. No, Krishna is always special. So I had to inject that little bit of correction to this visiting Maharaj from Vrindavan, because it's very important for us to understand that. That Krishna's position is always special, even when, or I should say, especially when we become pure devotees. So Prabhupada continues summarizing. Actually, this is not Prabhupada. This summary was translated by Gopal Pranandana. Different classes of people worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead in different ways. Fruitive workers worship Him by performing Vedic sacrifices, philosophers by renouncing material work and pursuing spiritual knowledge, yogis by meditating, Shaivites by worshipping Lord Shiva, Vaishnavas by following the injunctions of such scriptures as the Pancharatra, and other saintly persons by worshipping Him as the original form of the self, of the material substance, and of the controlling demigods. Just as rivers flow from various directions into the ocean, the worship of those who dedicate themselves to these various entities finds its ultimate purpose within the Supreme Lord Vishnu. The form of the total universe, the Virat Rupa, is imagined to be the form of Lord Vishnu. Like aquatics moving about in water, or like tiny insects burrowing in an Udumbara fruit, all living beings move about within the Lord. In other words, there is nowhere you can establish residence or space for activity outside of Krishna. All space emanates from Krishna. So wherever you go, you're still in contact with Krishna. It's not possible to be divorced from Krishna. These living beings, bewildered by His Maya, wander along the path of material work, falsely identifying with body, home, and so forth. Under the sway of illusion, a foolish person may overlook a reservoir of water covered by grass and leaves, and instead run after a mirage. Similarly, living beings caught in the grip of ignorance abandon Lord Vishnu and become attached to their bodies, homes, and so on. So, this is our situation. Akrura is very nicely pointing out that we abandon Lord Vishnu and become attached to our material positions, bodies, homes, and so on. And they simply produce misery. So he goes on to say, such faithful servants of their senses cannot take shelter of the Supreme Lord's feet. Only if by His mercy they get the association of saintly devotees will their material entanglement end. Only then can they develop Krishna consciousness by serving the Lord's pure devotees. So this is a summary of the wonderful prayers offered by Akrura. Now, I just wanted to touch on some maybe obvious comparisons with the prayers of all of these great devotees. Like here, the first verse, actual verse, Sri Akrura Ruvacha, Natosmiham Takila Hei Tuhetum, Narayanang Purusham Adyam Avyayam, Yanabi Jatad Aravinda Koshad, Brahmar Brahmavirasid Yata Esha Loka. So, Gopi translated that. Sri Akrura said, I bow down to You, the cause of all causes, the original an inexhaustible supreme person, Narayan. From the world of the lotus, born from your navel, Brahma appeared, and by his agency, this universe has come into being. So, very interesting that all these pure devotees, they begin their prayers by glorifying Krishna's position. So why? Krishna knows himself. He doesn't have to be reminded that he's the supreme person, that he's the cause of all causes, that why they all, just these words, almost exactly the same words, like we're studying Kunti's prayers. She starts out, Namaste Purusham Twadyam Ishwaram Prakate Param Alaksham Sarvabhutanam Antarbahir Chavashtitam. So almost the same thing. Namaste Purusha Twadya. Purusha, the supreme person. Adyam, the original. Same thing Vidura, Akura is saying here. You're the supreme person. You're the original. Avyayam, inexhaustible. So they all start out by glorifying Krishna in this way, stating his position, which may seem obvious, but why do they do that? First of all, it shows appreciation. It shows that they know who they're talking to. It's not like you're approaching some Baba and calling him the supreme person, or they know that Krishna is the supreme person, and so they begin their glorification of him in that way. And it also is educational for those who don't know. When you read these prayers, then you get an understanding of Krishna's position and who you're dealing with, and therefore one should be very attentive when hearing these prayers. Shukadeva Goswami, same thing, again, from the second canto. Namak parasmai purushaya bhuyase yat udbhavastan niroda lilaya grihita shakti chutayaya dehinam antarbhava yanu palaksha vartmani. Same idea, he's glorifying namak parasmai purushaya, same purusha, supreme person, bhuyase yat udbhavastan niroda lilaya, the creation, maintenance, and destruction of this material world are just going on by you, and actually it's just your lila. For us, this material world gives two things, apparently. Happiness and distress. But when you summarize it all, it's basically distress. Because whatever happiness you so-called happiness you experience in any particular lifetime, it's wiped out by the pain of death. You don't get to carry that happiness with you. I may be very much thrilled by my latest eye thingy. I'm always playing with it. You notice, you walk down the street nowadays and there's no more anything like eye contact anymore. Everybody's eye contact with their eye thingy. They walk. And there was one funny video on the internet I happened to see. It was one of those videos that go viral. This young lady was in a mall, shopping mall, walking along with her eye thingy, her eyes glued to it, and she tripped over. They had a fountain. And she tripped over the edge of the fountain and fell in. So this is how much we are, distracted. But so no matter how much happiness you get from your eye toys and your, interpersonal dealings, whatever, at the end, it's all painfully taken away. So basically, we're dealing with pain here. So, but if we get to this point of appreciating and understanding Krishna's position, then we begin to taste happiness. So these prayers, it's recommended that we hear them, just like earlier on, Prabhupada mentioned two shlokas that we should know, recite regularly in glorification of the holy name of the Lord. So one of them, when Vaisheshika Prabhu gave class, he touched on that one. Nikila Shruti Moli Ratnamala Duti Nirajita Pada Pankajanta I Mukta Kalirupasyamanas Paritastang Harinam Sankshayami. This is the first shloka in the Namashtaka, which is 8 verses glorifying the holy name written by Rupa Goswami. But in the second verse, it's also a verse that we've heard many times. It's from the 10th canto, first chapter of the 10th canto. And we should know this verse. Parikshit Maharaj is speaking here to Shukadeva Goswami, and he's appreciating Nivritta Tarshai Upagiyamana Mabhoshada Chochamana Omarama Ka Uttama Shloka Gunana Vardat Pumamirajeta Bina Pashugna. So this is, Prabhupada said we should recite this one regularly. Because it points out that these pastimes of the Lord, all Krishna Katha, they're all nectar. And he's saying in that shloka that only two classes of persons won't appreciate and feel ecstatic symptoms when they hear Krishna Katha. But Vina Pashugna. Pashugna is taken two ways. Pashugna, one who kills, killer of animals. And we all are animal killers. Don't get the feeling now that we're talking about just people who kill the cow. And we're all animal killers. A few days ago, I was chanting japa out in the BBT parking area there. And my vision is not so acute anymore at almost age 60, as it was like 20 years, 30 years ago. But I could see, even with my bad vision, practically out of every crack in the sidewalk, little entities are coming out. You don't even know what they are. Is it a spider? Is it a cricket? I mean, little, tiny little things. So we're all animal killers. We're walking down the street, we're killing so many of those. We don't even know it. Knowingly or unknowingly, we're all animal killers. But specifically those who do it, especially those who do it knowingly, killing the animals to eat their flesh. Pashugna. Such persons become hard-hearted. That's why we say meat-eating, there are four pillars that are holding up the house of religion. What are they? Acharya? Yes? Yes? Austerity? Cleanliness, yes. So, by eating meat, you're destroying which of those pillars? Mercy, yes. So if you're merciless, you cannot appreciate Krishna Katha. So those who are knowingly killing animals to eat their flesh, they're merciless, because it's totally unnecessary. It's not necessary. Since time immemorial, there have been vegetarians on this planet. It's not a new thing. Vegetarianism has been going on for thousands and thousands of years on this planet. And so people can live. It's been demonstrated repeatedly. A human being can live very happy, healthy life without having to take the life of animals to eat their flesh. So one who does that knowingly, pashugna, it becomes hard-hearted. And the accrued negative karma from that one activity, just that one activity of killing animals unnecessarily, that accrued negative karma is what the planet is suffering more than anything else. More than anything else. That killing of animals unnecessarily. Because it's equivalent to killing a family member, killing your mother. The cow, we know, is one of the seven mothers. Adi Mata Guru Patni Raja Patnika Deinu Datri Tata Prithvi. These are the seven mothers. Your birth mother, Adi Mata, Guru Patni, the wife of the guru. Because so we see traditionally in Vedic culture, quite often the gurus were householders. Just like Krishna and Balaram, they went to Sandipani Muni, he was a householder. Nowadays, we in our society, it's mostly the sannyasis that are gurus. But traditionally in Vedic culture, the householders were primarily the gurus. Because they took students when they were young. As boys, they would come to the Gurukula and leave home. So the guru was usually a householder. The wife was there to help with these young boys. And so they don't feel total, you know, separation from mother. So Adi Mata Guru Patni, Raja Patnika, the queen or wife of the king, Denu, the cow, Datri, the nurse, and Prithvi, the earth. These are all the seven mothers. So every one of those mothers should be honored, respected. And if you develop a hard heart towards any of those, then it's hard to appreciate God consciousness, Krishna consciousness. So we have to be very careful. Even though our birth mothers may not be devotees, we still have to honor them as far as possible. And the earth, we see nowadays nobody really honors the earth. They just rape the earth. And like that. So part of real spiritual culture is understanding these concepts, very simple concepts, and applying oneself. So the point I was making earlier, though, was that all of these great personalities, Akrura, Shukadeva Goswami, Mother Kunti, they all start their prayers by glorifying Krishna, and that glorification is appreciated, as Parikshit points out. It's the medicine for Bhava, the repeated birth and death that we're all undergoing. And Kunti also says something similar. Shinvanti Gayanti Grinanti Bhikshasha Tamanti Smaranti Tavehita Jana Taheva Pashyanta Achirena Pavakam Bhava Paraho Paramampadambajam. That those who take pleasure in hearing and chanting about you, or hearing somebody else doing it. It's not that I am only pleasure, you know, giving myself pleasure when I read or speak, but when you take pleasure hearing others glorify the Lord, then such personalities, they are fully sheltered under your lotus feet, which means they no longer see repeated birth and death. So this is the impetus for hearing nicely these beautiful prayers by wonderful devotees. Prabhupada suggested that when we come before the deities, we recite these standard prayers. We don't try to, you know, speculate and make up something. I mean, one can give heartfelt, like my ex-wife used to always laugh because I very often, even unconsciously, I would cry out, "Oh Krishna, save me from my own lusty desires." For years I would just do that. That's just a habit I would have. Just spontaneously I would just cry out like that. "Oh Krishna, please save me from my own lusty desires." So one can certainly heartfelt pray to Krishna in that way. But it's recommended that we learn these standard prayers, the prayers of Queen Kunti, Akrura's prayers, prayers of Gajendra, Shukadeva Goswami. There's so many beautiful prayers. What to speak of Prahlad's prayers that we're coming into pretty soon. So these are all standard prayers that we should try to learn. And we can certainly repeat them before the Lord for the Lord's pleasure. But one can also offer one's heartfelt plea. If there's something that's bothering you, come before the deity and make a plea. That's okay too. But we should take the time to really appreciate these standard prayers by wonderful, great devotees of the Lord. So we can stop here. Any questions, comments? Yes, back to Eric. Microphone, please.
Thank you, Prabhu, for a nice class. You mentioned that there's two types of people who can't appreciate Krishna Katha. There's the Pushunga.
Pushunga is seen two ways. The killer of the animal and the killer of the soul. In other words, you're living your life in such a way that you're just furthering your material entanglement. You're considered to be killing the soul. Atmaha. That word is also used in the Ishapanishad. So, the killer of the soul is also considered Pushugna.
Okay, I think that answers my question. I was just wondering what the second type
is. Yeah, so that's it. The killer of the animal and the killer of the soul. Okay. Both ways. So we should not become soul killers. You had something, Tapa Mitra? Mm-hmm.
Kura offered two sets of prayers. One when he entered Vrindavan and one... the runs that you read. Perhaps that's one reason why he's identified with this category of devotional servant.
Yeah, that's a good point. Akrura, Prabhu is reminding me that Akrura actually offered two sets of prayers. When he first entered Vrindavan, he was on his chariot, he saw the imprints of Krishna's lotus feet on the ground, and he jumped down and rolled in the dust of Vrindavan, and he offered prayers. And then again, on exiting Vrindavan.
Well, who made up that list of devotees, in different...
Good question. I'm not sure who the personality is. I think that list is there in one of the Puranas. You can ask Lojan. Lojan, he's one of our best kept secrets in this community. Lojan, he has two children, Pitambar and Aditi. Well, he has four actually. The other two are in India now getting educated. But he's a real Puranic scholar. He daily reads the 18 Puranas, and he's got a very good memory. And he'll just, if you give him time, he'll talk to you for hours and hours about one Puranic, statement or story after another. So he would probably know. I'll ask him later. But I think it appears in one of the Puranas. Wait, I had a question over here before you, Acharya. Yeah. Bhaktin Alexandra.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you for the class. I was just wondering, why is it better to recite prayers, which, we should learn? Why is it better than if you have very sincere prayers, but in your own language? Does it matter for Krishna how you pray for him, if you're praying for the same thing?
Yeah, that's why I said both can be there. The standard prayers, that's Krishna's name, one of Krishna's names is Uttama Shloka. which means that he's glorified with these transcendental songs. So the standard prayers that are offered by these devotees, or the special prayers, I should say, offered by these devotees, are very, very wonderful to hear and recite, because they have, as I started out my class by saying, there's no ulterior motive there. When you're materially contaminated, your prayers are also contaminated. So if you're a conditioned soul, when you're praying, your prayers are also contaminated. But the prayers of the pure devotees, there's no contamination there. So they're very pleasing for the Lord. The Lord is pleased when he's glorified in that way. Not that he's self-centered or narcissistic, but he deserves that. Whatever is being said about Krishna is just a fraction of what could be said. So Krishna appreciates being glorified by the prayers of his pure devotees, and it's purifying for us. The more we hear the prayers of Queen Kunti, the more we hear the prayers of Akrura, the more we hear the prayers of any of the great souls, they purify our heart. And therefore, we become more and more qualified to offer proper prayers. Otherwise, generally speaking, we come before the Lord, hey, I'm going to glorify you, but I have some deep-seated, you know, I hate somebody and I would like to see them disappear, or I or I want money, sweeter than honey. You know, I have something, I have some desire, material desire, to be fulfilled. Just like the story that Yogendra Maharaj told about the beggar whose feet were bad and he was praying for a horse. And, you know, so then you know to remember the whole story. And then he got a horse, but he had to carry the horse instead of the horse carrying him. So he thought that maybe Krishna hadn't heard his prayers properly. So like that, we go before the Lord and we pray for things, material things. Instead of praying for, you know, something wonderful, we pray, you know, for material things. So our prayers are contaminated. Therefore, it's recommended recite the prayers of the great devotees because those are pure. All right, last thing, Acharya, and then we can go. Is that all right? Okay.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for a wonderful class. So you were mentioning the seven types of mothers that is mentioned in the Vedic culture. So in our ISKCON temples, the temple president's wife should be considered like one of these categories, like mother?
Yeah, why not?
I know.
Generally speaking, yeah, devotees give respect to everyone. Like I said, even the little insects coming out of the crack we should be conscious of. So where is there any difficulty to offer special respect to the temple president's wife?
Seeing, you know, as you mentioned right now, yeah, with that point of view, definitely each Mataji deserves respect as a mother. Mm-hmm. But in the specific way of seeing,
yeah,
the temple president's wife,
yeah,
as a mother, yeah, is something that it is sanctioned,
mm-hmm, yeah,
in the scriptures.
So over and above those seven mothers listed is the injunction that one should see all women as mother, except for your wife. So if you're not married, you should see every woman as mother. So what to speak of the temple president's wife? Of course, you have to see her as mother. And in our ISKCON society, because previously the Gurukula, each guru had his own institution practically, right? Every guru had their own Gurukula, and the kids would go there to be trained. But now we have an international society in which, you know, one may become a spiritual master, but he still has to operate within the confines of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, which is basically means temples, which means there are temple authorities. So even if one is a guru, it's expected that one's disciples will, as long as they're living in under the shelter of an ISKCON temple, will see the temple president practically also as guru. That's for smooth running of the society. Otherwise, it becomes chaotic. If I'm living in an ISKCON temple, but I only listen to my guru, I don't listen to anybody else, that becomes chaotic. So the ISKCON injunction is that if you're living in an ISKCON center, you have to take shelter somewhat, to some degree, of the local authorities. It can't just be that I'm living in a center, but I only listen to what my guru tells me. That's it. No, that doesn't work. So in that mood, yes, one will see the temple authorities, the temple president, who could be a woman. We have women temple presidents in ISKCON. It's not only that. So if the woman, the temple president is a woman, do you see her husband as mother? Father. So the point is, one should take shelter of the local authorities also. And if for some reason you can't, then that has to be, you know, if there's some discrepancy, then that has to be addressed. But generally speaking, local authorities, temple president, temple president's wife, have to be respected. That's an ISKCON injunction. Jai, Granta Rachim Bhagatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.